Welcome to American Gypsy Podcast. I'm your host, Gypsy. And today I have a special guest, Burgundy Viscosi. Did I say that right?
It's, say it like an Italian, Viscosi.
Viscosi. I like that even better. She is a North American artist located here in the Seattle area. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Big fan of your work, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you.
I guess before we get started, introduce yourself a little bit, give us your background and how you got started.
Burgundy Viscosi, I'm a painter primarily. I have been painting for about 25 years. I started painting after a death experience, painting intensely. And I've lived in Seattle for about 27 years for a while. So,
okay. Did you start painting before the death experience, or is that what really got us started?
You know, I did do some art here and there. I had a strong interest in art. My grandmother was the director of Art and History Museum. As I was growing up in Texas. And so I definitely had a love and appreciation for art. I didn't find that drawing always came as easy as I wanted it to. So sometimes I'd get frustrated. And so I'd go through time periods when I would draw. But then I actually had a real love for acting. And so I kind of devoted all of my energies into going down like an act. I wanted to be an actress, so that kind of career. And then I actually joined the military when I was 17. I graduated early and I joined the military. And I was going into the military specifically for broadcasting and to get college to actually further the broadcasting would be one aspect of acting, right? So yeah. it was actually a long-term plan. I did do, like in school, I used to do a lot of like drawing to stay awake. Mm-hmm. I found that I can be a really great auditory processor, like if I'm doing something, like especially specifically drawing, mm-hmm. And I tend to retain information easy that way. And I learned that in school that like if I was drawing something, I could really remember the entire lesson. So you'd normally find me like doodling in school just to make sure that I felt, you know, I didn't fall asleep. So mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned the whole death experience. What was that like? Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, no, it was, I mean, in and of itself is a whole podcast, you know, I will say that it was life-changing. I had always had kind of a strong curiosity about death, I would say. My mother had committed suicide when I was young, and it was never hidden from me. And so death was a part of my understanding from such a young age. And I also had like, there was a lot of stigma, kind of being, I was in the Bible Belt, and there was a lot of kind of darker views on specifically suicide and kind of this, you know, damnation of going to hell. And so I had like a lot of like energetic tension about death, mm-hmm. and like for my parent to be, you know, like live into hell for eternity just didn't seem right. There was something that just didn't resonate with like the depth of my being, right?
Yeah.
And so it's a hard thing to like articulate out loud without sounding woo-woo, but there was a part of me that asked for death. Like I wanted to meet it. I wanted to understand it. I wanted to all of the things, right? in an orchestration of events, I ended up having a very severe car accident. And in the moment of my car accident, so much was explained. Like, I really feel that I crossed over and was able to have this communication with divinity and find out all the things and be relieved and realize that really this physical experience is the only thing that's temporary and that spirit is eternal. And you are spirit. We are all spirit. And so my mother's spirit is eternal and always with me and always, all of the things. And it was so magnificent. And it was such like there is no matter, permanent matter. Like nothing matters, but in a beautiful way. You know, that the heaviness that we feel, like, oh, everything's so crushing and important, and death and decay and all the things we have to experience in life. And that it's this beautiful unfolding that will continue to unfold for infinite amounts of different, in different beautiful bloomages, and that the decay itself is beautiful, and be only because it will then turn to ash and re-consume itself into a new beautiful state, right? And in all of it, like the transmission of all of that information was so beyond. I was 20 years old, and it was just like, oh, and I felt so relieved. But when I came back into the physical being, I was, in a demolished physical body. My body was broken and my back was broken in a couple spots. My ankle was completely crushed. My face was split open and demolished and the whole thing. And like I said, that's a whole episode, all of it. So, but the main thing was I did have to have a lung recovery. And so I was in a body cast, and the one thing that was still okay was my arms and hands, though. And that is when I started painting, and it was very cathartic. And interestingly, right out the gate, I felt that I could translate information easier that way than I could even articulate it, and it was more because when I would paint, I could, and maybe this is pre-learning, I have a pretty healthy meditation practice now. And at that time, maybe I didn't realize I was having one, but during the creation process, feeling tapped in to the creative channel itself kind of puts you in alignment with that continual blooming. And there's something about that that felt exactly like meeting the divine. And I just knew that yeah, I like that. And that's where I'm going to, hang out. And so then I started creating. What's interesting is that now that I've been doing it for, 25 years, I realized that the information that I kind of was downloaded, although it can't be exacted in this dimension, like in any sort of form, even just pointing the finger in the direction can really create some beautiful effects, right? And so that's kind of what I do. I kind of keep my north compass and find that place, and then the blooming of what is created through the paintings, or whatever medium I'm working in at that time is by me finding that space and tapping into it.
Okay. Did you get any kind of formal training at some point, or is it something you just kind of free flowing?
No, I ended up in an art class a couple times in high school. I went to quite a few different high schools. And I remember I ended up when I was in Connecticut once, I ended up in an art class because they didn't have any room in the drama class. And so I ended up in an art class, and the teacher was very insistent on me pursuing a draw or an art career. And at the time I was like, no, I'm an actress, and so I'd love to find him again and say, ah, oh, you're right.
What What are some things that you do to get you inspired or motivated or in the zone when you're painting? Or when you're coming up with ideas?
Yeah, so as far as ideas, the ideas will almost haunt me, like in a good way, in a good way. But I'll have an idea. I have lots of ideas. I'll have 10 ideas today, right? But then one will keep revisiting me and like keep revisiting me until it starts actually like manifesting into my experience in any of my communication with people or just events that happen, where it starts getting louder and louder, and I'm like, okay, I can hear you. It's time.
Is it a picture that
No,
you see, or is it?
for me, actually, it's normally more concept, and then it becomes a picture. It's a conceptual idea. I mean, some of my paintings, I'll admit, are for some of the aesthetic factors, but most of my pieces are actually like prayers and meditations, and they're ideas of how can we transmute more of this into humanity, right? Like, look, under the philosophy that each one of us is, we're part of the human consciousness, and each one of us holds a certain responsibility to, in my humble opinion, elevate the consciousness in a way that we then can move more gracefully and peacefully and cooperatively to figure out what is next for us, right? And so for me, I that most all of my messages that come through, then I have to figure out how to, articulate it into an image. Which that's kind of the fun part, because sometimes they're subtle and sometimes they're very, very direct. I definitely do. I do a meditation practice every morning. I think that's incredibly helpful. I definitely I do love cannabis. It is part of my I don't use a lot of cannabis. I feel like there's a dance. Cannabis has been used for eons in yoga, like in yoga practice. So I feel like a little bit too much cannabis, and I'd rather be physical. I'd rather be dancing or yoga, right? Where so a very, very minuscule amount, there's a very sweet spot where I tend to be a bit more present rather than concerning myself with the bills or, did I find parking over here? Or what, all the things, right? The brain will like try to figure out, especially living in city life, where there's a million little things that are going on, right? And I'm painting in the middle of the city with all the people around and everything. So I do find that just the right amount of cannabis will actually help me kind of like woo and come, So there are a certain few things I do, of course. It's Seattle, so I definitely like a little bit of caffeine in the mix too, So a little bit of coffee involved from time to time. But I think for the most part, I almost did. I've been painting for so long that it is my most natural state. I feel like I've painted more than I've done anything else in this lifetime so far, right? Consistently. And so I can pretty autopilot and just go in. I found that one of the fun things that I feel, that I've learned over the evolution of the technique of painting is that often I get, in the gallery, I'll get people that come in, that are young artists, and they're like, what about the artist block or the whole? And what I found is that the artist block is the greatest gift, and you can have it daily, and that's okay. What it means is that you're up leveling. Every time you hit a little bit of a block and you start seeing, like, finding yourself being distracted, or I don't know, I can't. No, it's just that you've never gone to this next level of your creativity. And so it's unfamiliar. So you tend to start avoiding it because it's because as human beings, we're habitual. And so if it feels unfamiliar, often we'll kind of push back and just get back into our old rhythm. So I found that even in the momentary blockages where I'm like, oh, I have to paint how many trees today or whatever, right? You know, there'll be a moment where you're just like, yeah. And then I'll be like, how can I approach those trees in a way I've never approached them before, right? And then interestingly, it clicks and it becomes instead of that blockage, it's literally like turning yourself in and you start kind of spiraling into that creative zone where you're like, oh no, this is, we don't know. That's the whole point. We don't know. And that's the beauty of it. That's the brilliance of it is that we're like, you know, at the tip of the lightning bolt, we're exploring an area that hasn't been explored before. And then once you become the explorer again, then the creativity starts flowing, right?
Yeah.
So,
Is there a piece that, what is a piece that you had a hard time with, and what's the story behind that? Why did you have a hard time?
Well, I would say a lot of those are fortunately further back, but I still have challenges. Like I said, I approach them differently now. So in order to survive as an artist initially, I did a lot of portraiture. It's something that people will pay for right out the gate, right? Like it's something that and often it would be like eventually it became mostly animals, which is divine. They're adorable and I love them. Humans, on the other hand, have a very strong opinion about how they look or how they want to look or how they want to be portrayed. And just doing human features is challenging in general, right? It's not the easiest. For some people it is, but I would say for the majority of artists will admit hands and faces can definitely be challenging if you get something a little off, especially if you're trying to make it look like somebody specifically, right? So I've definitely had my fair share of those. I'd say the biggest challenges are commissions, which I don't do as much, but you know, because you are often you're trying to meet somebody at least halfway, right? You're trying to what do they have in mind? What do you have in mind? And when it's magic, it's really magic because there is that when the red and the blue become purple and you're like, oh my gosh, we created something that's way better than either one of us thought would ever happen, right? You know, and that's magnificent. And then there's those times where I think either side have a rigid idea of what they want, right? Myself as well. You know, it's been both sides of the fence for sure. And then like trying to that I feel has been my biggest challenges, you know. And then and yeah, like I said, the animals are a lot more easygoing. They normally aren't critical of it. So they're not like my hair was out of place. You know, they're pretty good. So but the humans definitely there's been some challenges along that.
What is your favorite, I guess, medium? I don't know if that's even how you say it, but I know you do murals. Like, if you can just do one of those, like, what would be your favorite?
My visionary ideas and concepts that are very complex that definitely like I'm working on one right now, but the ones that take months and at some point hopefully take years. You know, I like taking that much time and diving in because so much magic can happen inside of the painting when you allow that much time and space, right? It's kind of there's an affordability to it too, unless it's prepaid for, you know, there's also affording to take that time to spend a year just working on one painting, right? So there's a balance, and I feel that like that's kind of where I'm going with my work, where I will be able to I mean, the thing is that I think all of us artists would never call ourselves at the level of mastery. I think that it is something that, people can say, oh, this many hours and such, but in reality, it's always just a little bit beyond. It's always just a little bit beyond because it's about the process. It's never about the end result, right? And so the great news is that two of my greatest mentors, are in their 70s and doing magnificent work, right? And so, and I think about it and I'm like, yeah, because they've been painting for 50 years, so there's this longevity with it, that I feel I'm excited for the ride. And so the place where I'm at with my art is very far from the place that I envision it. And sometimes it can be uncomfortable to be so far from that space. But as long as I'm present in the moment of the learning, then what happens in the learning, you stay in the learning consistently. And then every once in a while, when you take a break, you go, huh. Okay, we're getting somewhere, and so it's a very long, and it's just kind of a beautiful dance, in life. It's like, I mean, should I decide to transcend this physical body, in a week or in, another 50, 60 years, like it's no matter what, then it's like this beautiful partner dance of your life experience that it's like a journal, it's this, it literally is for me like a journal. When I look at some of my older paintings, sometimes it's even just like the colored paint that I used. I was like, oh, I remember that paint. I haven't seen that in years, or it's like a certain pattern. And I remember what I was thinking when I was creating that pattern. Right. So it's always so interesting to see past paintings. And at this point, I've created so many paintings, especially having done commissions for so many years, that every, it's more often than not, somebody will be like, oh, you did that painting for me. And they'll like send a picture and I'll be like, oh my gosh, I almost forgot about that one. Right. And it's so fun to see. And then to see all the different, and I'm like, oh, I do remember trying to like that new gold foil I was using or whatever it is. Right.
Yeah, I'm sure your techniques have changed over since when you started. I do want to talk about how the color affects on your paintings when the light hits it. I don't know what you even call it. Can you explain that a little bit?
So there's two different techniques that I kind of lean into. Obviously, it's more of an in-house experience. Both of the techniques I really started leaning into once I opened my gallery. I opened it in 2021, and it was right after the pandemic. That technically, we were still in the pandemic. We were still masked, and there was limited the whole thing, and we were deep in it. And I just knew I wanted to gift. I'm going to back up a little bit and just explain. When the pandemic first hit, I remember listening to a podcast, and it was about how they had studied plagues throughout history, right? And like go way back, Venice and Rome and all these big, gigantic, metropolitan areas that then all of a sudden a disease would come. Right. And then in those cases, really wipe out populations or at least scare a lot of the population and the whole thing. And what they found is that a lot of the people that were only in city life for financial reasons and also had the financial means would leave and they would exit the city because then all of a sudden it was dirty and it was like this, death. And like, there was disease and dirt and the whole thing. And oh, it's a dirty city. And they would leave. And when they would uproot, they were saying that it was pretty consistent that the Bohemians were the first that would come back. And they'd be like, ooh, cheap property, or whatever, right? Like they'd be like, I never could get that otherwise or whatever. But what they found is that it was the healthiest thing that could happen because then the culture came back in. And when the culture came back in, then the city would then, so it didn't become just this vacant case of then just basically commerce, right? Where instead, you actually get the singing and the dancing and the art and the interaction and the communion of the people, right? And I remember when I listened to this podcast, I was like, that is it. I'm opening a gallery. And I had really never specifically thought of it. I had helped run some galleries. I had definitely rented out galleries from time to time, but I had never thought, okay, I'm gonna just take up space, to become a gallery. And fortunately, it was a majestic thing that happened, and I ended up coming to the most beautiful space, in my opinion, in Seattle, right on the waterfront, and was so blessed. I feel that there was like a symbiotic nature of, I'd always wanted a houseboat, but my husband is really tall, and he's always been like, I don't know about these houseboats. And so I love that it was like this universal, I was like, oh, I can still be on the water all day long, So anyways, I opened this. And I just kind of felt around. I kind of the same way when I'm painting. So I opened it. I was doing some live paint, like literally just painting on what I was painting on, but it felt very festival-like where I get to live paint and I've got my art and all the things. And first it started more, I knew that the lighting changed my paintings. And that mostly has to do with a great way to explain it is I have a blue tattoo on my arm. If I shine a blue flashlight on it, it's going to negate it. Like it literally will look like I have no tattoo here, which is really cool. Yeah, no, it's a really fun thing. And so it works the same on the canvas. So when a color is flooding over itself because of relativity to the other colors, it will negate it, okay? And so it'll look like it is like a light color of some sort rather than the color itself. And so when you put colors in a particular spectrum, in the same spectrum that whatever light you're using is using, then you can negate, 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 and you get this like fluttering effect, right? And so that's why the paintings can start feeling like they're moving. So that's one technique that I knew of, because I used it on my paintings before, but only in mild cases. I hadn't really leaned into it because it's kind of a faux pas. Like in a lot of like traditional painters, they don't play with any of that kind of stuff. They don't play with the fluorescence. They don't play with, there's a whole, because fluorescence fade and there's a million different, like if you're professionally trained, there's a million things that you're not supposed to do. I do all of them. I do all of them. And at first, it used to make me very self-conscious. And then I realized, you know what? The only way to create something new is to break all of those rules and start over, right? And it's not that I don't know them. I just don't, they're not for me, right? Not for what I'm creating. So the glasses as well. So the glasses, the ChromaDepth glasses are actually chromostereoptic. I say stereo-optic so people can, but it's actually like stereoptic, more like a colorful dinosaur, rather than. But I say chromostereoptic so that you can like break down the word chromo like color, stereo like in stereo, and then optics like your eyes, right? So like chromostereoptic, right? And so also another thing that a lot of professional artists don't really lean into, they're originally designed for computer screens. But what happens because I isolate my color, I can separate them. There's quite a large separation, right? And so what I found is when you lean into the two of them together, both the lighting effects and the glasses, there's a sweet spot where this magic happens that is almost, I mean, I dare say it's hypnotic. I found that I was doing it in my house initially, and my husband, who's not much, I mean, I think he's a natural meditator, but he doesn't like sit every day and meditate. He was sitting in front of it with the glasses and the lighting and kind of had, his own out of body experience. And more or less, he's the one who said, no, this has got to be given to the public. Like this is definitely. So when I opened the gallery, I kind of experimented and I brought some of the glasses in and I pumped up the lighting and I found that he was absolutely right. Like the people wanted it. And it was funny because initially it was kind of like this side thing that I did. I was like, oh yeah, by the way, it'll do this and that. And what I found is that the humanity in general, having a suspended belief is so healthy. All of a sudden we become children again. So what happens is, when somebody steps into the gallery, they're instantly given the glasses. And a lot of the times, because I'm in such a heavily tourist popular area, right? It's just people shop hopping. They're not really concerned about going into an art gallery. They're just like, oh, what's the next shop? And they just kind of shop hop along the waterfront, right? And initially, when I opened, I assumed it would be a lot of my visionary art people and my festival people who would help me sustain as a gallery. And what I found, it was the, I mean, they are amazing and they do very supportive. What I found, it's the other part of the population who's never experienced anything like it that have the most fun. And so, you get sweetheart Bubba from Middle America who is terrified when he walks in. No, at first he's like, oh, I'm in the wrong shop. And then I'm like, just here's some glasses, just try. And at first, it's the wait, why is that happening? And then once I kind of take him in a little deeper and then incorporate the lighting, the next thing, then he's like, Ethel, get in here. No, I know it's weird in here, but come on in. You've got to see this, And what it is that it allows them to be children for a minute and not know why it's happening, what's happening right now, right? And I feel that it's healthy. It's just so healthy for us. We get stuck in our habitual patterns, and we don't often like step into a space that is new and maybe uncomfortable at first, but then allows kind of, I dare say, consciousness to expand for a moment, because then you just perceive things in a new and a different way. And so it's been really fun. So yes, that's kind of, I answered two things because they kind of go together, both the lighting and then the glasses, which is purely based on physics and wave frequencies. So warmer values have longer wave frequencies. So with the glasses, you're literally seeing them before you see the blues. That's why it feels like there's a depth there, right? So the science aspect of it then gets like kind of the my favorite geeky crowd in, because they're just like, okay, let's talk science now,
And
which
you
is
don't have
fun.
to use a specific type of paint, do you?
No, it's just it's the contrast between your warms and cools primarily for the glasses, and then it is the it's actually consecutive colors for the lighting. So it's any sort of, when you think of the color wheel, it's any sort of blocks of those consecutive colors. Although nowadays, especially with like the hue systems and such, a lot of the lighting, you can actually mix up the variables of the lighting. And so now there's an infinite potential of things that can be done. So it's really, I mean, it just keeps expanding. So.
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite part of your artwork. I love showing people when they come over, like, how it does the color dance. It's just really cool. Was there ever a time where you felt like you stepped out of your comfort zone as far as bush painting? You felt like it was completely out of your comfort zone.
I just did a mural last week or the week before, and I hadn't done a mural in a couple of years. And definitely, size, whenever you start going big, that's not something I do a lot of. I've done some murals in my life, and I've gone through time periods where I've done more than, and have been more comfortable. I hadn't done that in a while, and that was definitely just trying to, and that was a very tight time frame too. And so as a construction site that needed to be turned over and like all the things, and I had a window to get in and get out. And that definitely challenged me and brought me a bit outside of the comfort zone. I love the I think about this often, and sometimes I I try to remind myself to move into that space more often. I'm sure you've seen maybe the David Bowie interview where he more or less, I'm not, it's not going to be the proper quote, but what he expresses is that you shouldn't be comfortable. Like, is if you're in your best creation, you should always be a little uncomfortable. And he describes it like when you're in the ocean and your feet are just barely can touch, but maybe not, like right on that space where you're just like, oh, maybe the earth is there, but I'm not sure, you know? And
Yeah.
so I think that I agree with that too. I agree that often, especially like I told you about kind of the concept of pushing through the art blocks, but that's like the macro, where the micro is like those moments where I'm trying to work something out on the canvas that I can see in my head, but I don't know how to create, like I'm trying to figure out how to create it. And like I'll get to that point where I'm just like, oh, so agitated and want to set the paintbrush down. And I find that those are when I finally like, and often it's not exactly how I imagined it in my head, but yet it's something totally different, and it's something I've never done before, and all of a sudden it feels like a breakthrough, right? Where I'm just like, ah, that's different, but that's, I'm totally good with that. And I always think of it this way, like everything in nature moves at a curvature. So like when you're talking about our DNA or the universe or Fibonacci and all those things, there's always a curve, right? So there is no straight line, meaning there's also no straight line in perspective. So my thought of like, I want to create this exact idea in my head, it's always going to be, there's always going to be a curvature. So what you're going to create is always going to have a slight variation. And that's, I feel that that's kind of the magic.
Have you ever gotten into NFT or any digital medium? And what do you feel like? What are your thoughts on that, the impact it has on the art world?
It's interesting, you know. So I think during those in 2020, I think a lot of artists kind of jumped into the Clubhouse scene. Do you know about Clubhouse? Yeah. So
Barely.
it was a thing. I honestly knew nothing about NFTs, but then I started hanging out in Clubhouse, and there were so many NFT rooms. I ended up running a couple rooms and then actually having guests on to explain how to do NFTs, just so that I could like it was, so it wasn't something that I didn't understand any longer, right? Like I wanted to understand them, and I created one just so I could go through the whole process, right? Being a traditional painter, I suppose there is a field. I mean, one of my dear, you know, my mentors, two of them, Alex and Allison Gray, amazing humans. I remember they, you know, their NFT drop. I mean, it was very impactful, very impactful. So I've definitely seen the extremes of it. You know, I've seen where people have just like flooded the airwaves with tons of art and have had no success, to the other extreme where they put one painting out and it brings in millions, you know, like it's kind of the extremes of things. You know, I don't know. I don't know. It's an area that you know what I will say though? I am going to honor the mental perspective of it, because I remember when I first started making actual physical prints of my artwork, right? And I remember my other mentor, James Crispinell, he was my first and my love. He's one of the reasons that I kept my journey of painting going. Amazing artist. I remember when I first started printing, and he said, ah, now you're making your own currency, you know, and it felt right, because like this was literally like I connected to it more than like a piece of money, like, you know, like a dollar bill or something instead. Like, literally, that was part of my soul that I then have now put on a piece of paper that
Right.
then I'm now using in exchange for energy, right?
Yeah.
And so that concept, right, of it being an energetic exchange, I do feel that there is absolute, there's a correct potential in there. And how that, I mean, I feel like the flooded market, and there was obviously a lot of it had to do with also just currency, like just kind of the exchange of currency. And so some of it I don't think was as authentic as as other parts, right? I do think that there will be some sort of, you know, I don't know, it mesh that will create something new that I don't even think that we know yet. And I'm not as heavy in the technology world. I never have been, as I've never really led in that direction, like
It's
the
more of like how you feel personally. Do you feel like you want to incorporate that into your future, or is it something like, I'm not interested, it's for somebody else type of thing?
It would have to be stimulating to me. And so far it hasn't stimulated me, right? And it has to be a natural stimulation. And so at this point, and so it would be me pairing up with a digital artist that then can take my paintings to the next level. You know, if I devoted all my time to digital, maybe I could create something magnificent, but honestly, I'm very stingy with my time because I like it actually with the physical brush. Like I have devoted myself to that tactile nature, and it feels like at this point I don't want to surrender so much time in that dimension. I did play for a while. I was part of a cannabis company, and I did dive into, I was painting with tilt brush for probably a couple of years almost, which is a virtual reality, like painting inside virtual reality. And so it's pretty and very addictive, very
Yeah,
addictive. Oh yeah, no, I had fun, and I could see how I could surrender all of my paints and go live in there. Like I definitely in the meta and just freaking paint, because all of a sudden I remember I was hanging out with all these, you know, 19-year-olds, and they gave me all the equipment, and they're like, here, you paint something. They're like, you're a painter, paint something. And I go in and I do the thing, and I'm literally painting for about maybe 10 minutes. And then they're like, no, you paint in 3D, you're painting flat, paint in 3D. And so then I was like, okay, a tree. And then I started like obviously like creating the tree, and then I could make it this big, and it was literally a tree and the whole thing. And I was like, and I remember I like stopped and I like took off all my gear, and they're like, what? And I'm like, I need to eat a meal because I'm gonna be in there for a while, you know. And I was serious because I knew that once I, you know, it was like its own addiction that I could tell that I could spend the rest of the day inside there, right? And so I played with it for a while, and then it was also one of those things where I was like, yeah, it's a choice. I could either dive in that direction, or I think I'm gonna stick with what I'm doing, and then, you know, and if there's a collaboration maybe at some point.
And I don't think it's one or the other. It's more like I didn't understand the idea of NFT initially when it first bubbled up to the mainstream. I'm like, what's the whole point of this? Like, I think the physical thing is more valuable. But when metaverse and all of these things started coming out, now there's a utility for it. Now a lot of
Absolutely.
people are starting to buy digital real estate. Now there's a lot more like concerts and different things happening in the metaverse
Absolutely.
and things that we have no idea about that are coming up in the future. And so I think that's it's more of something to incorporate more so than going one way or the other.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think that it, in my humble opinion, I think that most of the art that I have enjoyed in the NFT world has been digitally amplified, right? So like my flat canvases in order for them to actually like take on their exquisite nature, would definitely I would prefer them to dance and move and do all the things, right? Which I currently don't have that ability to, but there's plenty of people who do. And so that's why I said there might be in the future, I might a collaboration that will help kind of bloom that. I'll hold down my fort on this side of the thing, and then yeah, so yeah, no, I think it is important. I definitely don't want to become an old lady too early and say, I don't know about all that stuff, all those youngsters out there doing that. Like, no, I wanna explore and play and definitely understand, because I will say that the thing about the metaverse and technology in that way, it is much more precise. Now, I was about to say cleaner, and I understand that right now there's a lot of controversy about, NFT energy and all that, right? As far as the impact on the planet and all that, there's plenty of that. And I'm talking outside of that scope, and I'm saying that energetically, the energetic field of energy just recycling and becoming other things is much more in a mirror reflection of spirit than a lot of the heavier physical dimension. So I respect it and honor it in the sense of where a lot of people I think are terrified of it and are afraid of all the AI and all the different things. Whereas I have a deep, profound sense within my being that there is nothing outside of the divine. And so its expression is only going to play in all of these different ways that are in the same way that, like, me trying to express an idea on the canvas, right? That it's only going to get closer. It's only going to get closer to its expression, right? And so I feel in the process, you make a mess. Like, I made a lot of messes on the canvas before I learned how to paint something, and that's and so I feel that we're going to make a lot of messes along the way, and that's where I think kind of easing humanity into a more compassionate collective consciousness about how we're moving in that direction will yeah, I think it'll just be easier on all of us.
Do you have any projects or any art shows that are coming up? Let the listeners know.
Well, I head to Texas next week for the eclipse. So that'll be fun. I have worked on an eclipse painting that I will be taking to Texas. So that'll be nice. I definitely last eclipse I did in Oregon, at the Texas Eclipse Festival, and created some beautiful artwork. Did kind of a collaboration with my dear friend Eric Nez, and we came up with a beautiful painting. I found that the eclipse definitely like shifted and altered my life in many ways. So this particular eclipse is coming right through where I was born the day after my birthday. So it's like real heavy energy, like in a good way, but I'm also just like, oh my gosh, okay, here we go. Here comes the shifts. Like I can feel it. I can feel it. I've been working on jewelry. My auntie, my mama auntie who raised me, Linda, she passed away last year, still last year. And she left me all these beautiful gemstones. And before she passed, she had a very specific talk with me that was like, you are going to make something beautiful with these, And so it was, I had never done anything with jewelry before. And so she designed jewelry. Her hands had kind of went towards the end of her life. They weren't, she couldn't do things, make jewelry any longer, but when her hands were still solid, she used to make some really beautiful jewelry. So I wanted to kind of honor her in that way. And my favorite jewelry that I've ever seen in the world is from Nepal. So last fall I went to Nepal, and and started working with some designers
Mm.
to you know, the visions that I have to actually implement them into the metal and using the gemstones and the whole thing. And I'm probably going to go back again this fall. I have now that I have a better sense of what I can do and what, like, with the inventory I have and all of those things. So that is, you know, the jewelry is definitely a fun project. I really, really want to, and if anyone out there has any great suggestions, my next big thing I really want to do is seed packaging. So I want to, I love one of my favorite things, and one of the things that me and my husband enjoy the most is planting things. We love gardening, but we also love flowering and planting and growing. And, you know, like in the Mad Max movie, like the seeds are, they're the thing, like, where are the seeds, right? And so I feel like I love seeds, and I've seen some really beautiful seed packaging out there. And so I want to create a whole line. I want to pair up with a seed company and create a whole line of our packaging for seeds. So that's kind of something I'm really excited. I'm trying to pick things that I can contribute my art to that I love. So I also want to eventually be on chocolate packaging. I'm picking things that I'm like, what are the things you like? Well, I love chocolate. You know, so yeah, some stuff, because I the space that I'm currently in, which I love down on the waterfront, is a smaller space. And so I mean, to turn around and to do the paintings, and I don't have space for gigantic paintings at the moment, in the smaller space that I'm at. So that's why, and with merchandising, I don't want to just put a whole bunch of merchandise out there that I don't feel personally connected to. And so that's why, and I love consumables because they make sense to me, right? Like, it's actually something that you consume, or the seeds and the whole thing, right? And so, those are, like, when I gift people, I try to do something in that regard. I love to give people something that is consumable or usable or in those ways. And so kind of in the space that I'm in, filling it in those ways with the things that I really like, feel authentically. I don't want to sell something that I don't truly like believe in, right? That doesn't resonate with me. And so then I just had to, like, stop and go, so if you walk into a store, what do you really want?
Especially where it is, it's perfect. Like sometimes tourists can't pick up a big painting, but they can pick up
Exactly.
some
Yeah. A
chocolate
chocolate bar
beverage.
with a Seattle on it, you know? Yeah,
Exactly.
so it's kind of fun. I never imagined that I'd be on that side of things, like with merchandising. That was never, like, I never had
The
the,
luggage thing I really love,
oh
by
my
the
God.
way. That was a great
The
idea.
luggage is really fun. I know I haven't purchased one myself, although it's been haunting me because I definitely yeah, it's one of those that you, like, you know it's your bag, right? Yeah.
Definitely crazy. Well, before we close it out, is there anything you want to leave the listeners with? Anywhere they can find you or anything?
I am a burgundyviscosi.com, BurgundyViscosi.com. Currently, there is only one Burgundy Viscosi on the interwebs, and so it is the same for all of my social medias. So it's my name for all across all platforms. I have my oracle deck, and on the Instagram, I do a weekly reading, which has been a new project this year. It's great because it holds a lot of accountability for me too. I feel that really living that which I am expressing that week has definitely been a different walk. You know, it's it, and I love it because I get some feedback and I get some interaction and then I get some reminders and there's all this blooming that's happening with that that I'm really having fun with. And it's interesting because it's a much smaller audience than my general art is, like that particular thing. But I found that that is where I feel my like the gyroscope of my soul, like the center of it is right now, is that like I love my creative process, but also like incorporating that auditory, like we're doing right now, you know, and figuring out how to express my being in all of those ways. So yeah, I'm trying to do a little bit more on it out in the interwebs.
Social is tough. And for the listeners, all of Burgundy's information will be in the description. And as always, you can find us at AmericanGypsy.com or on all podcast platforms. Thank you for listening and peace.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.